bringing you his authentic perspectives on important topics.
They live in suburbs together. They live in the city together. They hang out together, all in the same family. We're the only idiots that fight because we want our voice to only be on one side. Like, does that even make any sense? And when the side loses, you lose everything. They, on the other hand, have a voice no matter what, because somebody that looks like them is always in control.
Frank, candid, and straight to the point.
Well, it's just a skewed system.
Of course it is.
It's a lot of judgment.
But answer my question, though. Should we let people go? Should we let people go? Like, let's just forget about bail altogether. And if your neighbor commits a homicide and kills people, if you kill people and they next to you and you just let them come back and live right next to you, they can live upstairs from you. Let them come in your house.
Frank, candid and straight to the point. This is the best radio show in the state of Wisconsin. Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 101.7 The Truth and The Truth app.
Now, he's the mayor of the city of Milwaukee. He's a young man. Give him a chance. I only complain about things that I care about. What I want you to do is pretend like I'm in St. Louis. And all I'm asking the mayor and the Common Council president and the Common Council, show me.
Now, live from the American Family Insurance Studio at The Avenue in the heart of downtown Milwaukee, here is Dr. Ken Harris.
You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris. Our guest is going to continue because I tied her to the chair and I said she couldn't leave until we talk more about race, class, and soaps. Dr. Elena, did I get it? Elena Levine. I told you I'm really bad and I apologize.
Don't worry.
With names. From the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. She's a professor of English and has written a very powerful historic book on my favorite topic, which is why I even saw her name and went, soap opera. And then I found out she was from Milwaukee. I was like, oh, perfect. I got to call her. And so thank goodness, you know, summer didn't come and you didn't, I'm not going to look at my email until like July, you know, and you finally looked. I was like, yes. So what role has race and class played in the creation of black soap operas or black soap opera characters?
Yeah. So as we were talking a bit about before, I mean, historically soap operas are incredibly white, in both behind the scenes and on camera, in large part because the assumed audience was white middle-class housewives. Mm-hmm. And they thought, okay, we're going to give them the world that they want to see. I mean, similarly, there were, you know, no gay characters. There were no, you know, like there was, it was all a very limited world. And that starts to change, like lots of things in television change in the 60s with the civil rights movement and things like that. And you started to have some black characters. Rarely characters from other racial and ethnic backgrounds. And those characters were always sort of a little bit peripheral to a lot of the story worlds of soap operas. Mm-hmm. Soaps had a hard time integrating them more fully into the communities that the shows were revolving around. That starts to change in the 80s and 90s. But they're still kind of on the fringes in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
I think in the last 10 to 15 years, the soaps that remain, a bunch of soaps got canceled in the 2000s. There were only four left. And I think the remaining shows started to realize that they had to find a way to make the shows still work with the audiences they had. And the truth that had been the truth for quite a while is that black audiences for daytime soap operas are very large. They over-index, meaning there's more, the percentage of black viewers is higher than the percentage of African-Americans in the population.
Right.
So definitely women, but you know, men and women, both black men and women, both. So I think there started to be a realization of like, this is a significant segment of our audience. They love these shows. They're committed to them. They're loyal viewers. And a lot of soaps, I think, started to bring more black characters to the center of their storylines as a result.
Mm-hmm.
I think that happening. And then, with streaming and all of the ways that the audience for broadcast television has shrunk and gotten smaller and smaller in recent years, CBS I think, recognize, like, listen, we have a pretty loyal audience in Black women, and we know that this is an audience that really likes soap opera, and they had this project that they're in 2020, CBS made an arrangement with the NAACP to try to advance certain kinds of programming that and the woman who was running that initiative, this woman, Sheila Duxworth, she's a soap fan, and she's like, I want to make a soap, and she made it happen. And remarkably enough, there's a new soap on TV these days, Beyond the Gates.
And so this is a soap opera starring some of my favorite characters, Tamara Tooney. Other than that, I don't watch it except for her. Like,
yes, she's awesome.
She's the matriarch. Carla Cheetah Mosley, Maurice Johnson. A lot of names. You go, who are these people? I've never heard of these people. And then you get to Clifton Davis.
Yeah.
And you know Clifton Davis is a staple. I don't think there's a – I don't even think you can racialize it. I don't think there's a woman alive that doesn't think Clifton Davis is handsome. So you mention the name and they kind of get that look. You know, like you just get.
Yeah, yeah, he's the best.
Yeah. And so – But then my pushback is it's guarding the gates of upper class.
Yeah.
Of the Martha's Vineyard, Sag Harbor.
Right.
You know, that ilk. And so is it really something that people can look at, or are you showing me something like, say, what Cosby did with showing you a upper middle class? Well, this is way more than upper middle class.
Yeah.
An upper middle class black family who is struggling to get their kids in college and trying for them not to get pregnant before they get married and all kind of stuff, the same as every other family, so that black and white families can identify with it. Beyond the Gates is clearly black.
Yeah.
In everything. Like, I watch even some of the linguistics. The language is black.
Yes.
And so how do you think that'll fly?
You know, so far it's doing pretty well for, you know, what a daytime soap opera on a broadcast network does these days. It's doing well. I think it's actually the ratings for all the soaps have gotten a little bit of a boost from it, I think, because it's gotten so much hype, which is exciting and fantastic. I think you're right. It's an interesting choice. They very deliberately decided to have a very wealthy elite family be at the center of the show and their world. And in a lot of the promotion, they talk about black excellence and they want to showcase black excellence, which is great. It suggests that excellence and wealth are the same thing, right? As if they're
as if you're not excellent, if you're not wealthy,
right? So I've kind of, you know, I'm a little,
The cart come before the horse?
Yeah. Isn't there a lot of black excellence out there that isn't connected to extreme wealth necessarily?
Right.
And you know, in part that's why they. Procter & Gamble wanted to make the show, CBS wanted to make the show, is they know that there's a substantial black marketplace out there who may not be rich, wealthy, but is, you know, upper middle class, has money to spend, and that's who these, you know, networks and advertisers are trying to target. So it's not that there's not black audiences with money, but the kind of ultra wealthy. My sense of it is that they just thought that this has not been seen in soaps before, is the very wealthy black family. There have been black families. Some have been middle class families. Some have been, you know, more poor or working class families in daytime. But having like this, you know, world of black wealth hasn't been seen before. I mean, it makes for good TV in terms of the clothes and the settings and the kind of lavish stuff. There's like another party that they're having every other week, you know, very fancy parties, things like that. So I get it in that respect. And, you know, I do think that they're trying to do something that is presenting a kind of admirable picture. But it does seem to be a very limited perspective of class, at least for anybody, right? For any Americans, and definitely, of course, also for black Americans, having this elite wealthy family at the center.
And so how long do you think it'll last? I mean,
you know
it just got renewed for a second season.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways all bets are off because I never would have guessed that there would be a new soap ever again in my lifetime. Yeah. So the fact that it exists at all is a miracle. And I mean, I'm rooting for it. I think it's actually started to get pretty, I've been watching it. It's started to get pretty good. Like, I care about the characters now. I'm invested. And I think I hope that it makes it because it's good for soaps overall, for sure. And it's very cool to see. I don't know. Historically, it's very hard for a new soap to get going. The other soaps, I mean, the youngest of the other soaps on air is almost 40 years old.
40 years old, right.
Yeah. So it's pretty unusual. And, you know, it's been a long time. I mean, The Bold and the Beautiful started in 1987, is still on the air. And that's like the last new soap to really last. So hard to know what to expect, but it's a different universe now. There hasn't been a new soap in this universe where the expectations are different because nobody's getting the kind of audience numbers that they once did in broadcast TV.
Why is this so hard? And I won't keep you long. Why is this so hard to bring Black characters into these soaps? Is it the fact that they created this world where Black people just don't live anyway?
You know, I think historically, I would say like 80s and earlier, a lot of people thought that the audience would not accept any kind of interracial relationships. And so because soaps were structured around families often, having Black characters come in, well, how are they going to fit in if nobody can, you know, get together with anybody across racial lines?
Which is a weird thought, but.
Yes, a weird thought and, you know, really problematic and racist one in lots of ways. But I think that held them back for a long time in like, what do we do with these characters? How can we blend them and bring them into the story world? I think that it's not just because of interracial relationships, but other kind of recognitions that these are communities, the fictional on-screen worlds are broader communities and they can contain people from all different backgrounds. I mean, I think it's started to change in that way, and there's been some soaps that have had central Black families for a while. And so that has continued, you know, that has started to make it more and more. But I think part of it is just very limited thinking about who was in the audience. And I think that's starting to change, which Beyond the Gates is a sign of.
And so what did I hear recently? Byron Allen is selling he went to a broker now, and he's going to sell his TV show. His TV, I don't know what you call it, conglomerate.
Yeah.
Like, he just bought several small TV stations for about $1 billion, and now he's, like, selling. So I wonder, what does the future hold for television when there are literally no Black people that have control over any stations in America?
Yeah, that's been an issue for a long, long time in the history of media. And if we want to get to talking about media ownership, I mean,
it's a bleak
picture, right? There's about four massive corporations that pretty much own everything. And so that is, that's a problem for everybody. That's a problem for the society in terms of diversity of viewpoint and everything, right? And that kind of conglomeration of media being owned by fewer and fewer, bigger and bigger companies is its own issue. That's definitely worth talking about. But yeah, I mean, there was a time in the 70s where there was an attempt to increase what was called minority ownership of media. Right. And there was some progress there. And then with cable, there was some progress initially with BET, but then BET got bought out. You know, like there's all these kind of fits and starts around that. And I mean, I think the question of ownership is a really important one. And it might be where the limit of what kind of progress that we can make is as long as those big companies own it all.
I find that interesting. Valerie on the Talking Text, I said, there are six soaps, Young and the Restless, Bold and the Beautiful. Watch this. Don't know. One Life to Live, General Hospital, Days of Our Lives, and now Beyond the Gates. Where have you been, Valerie? One Life to Live has been gone for at least 20 years. Maybe 15, 20. Yeah. Like it's
early
gone.
2010s.
It's gone.
Sadly gone, yes.
Yep. So that was all my children, One Life to Live in General Hospital.
Yeah.
You know? And I don't know where these cities were in New York, but everybody was in New York, but they tape it in Hollywood. Like, I never understood, you know, the whole, where was all my children in, let me see. Pine Valley, Landview. And Port Charles. Mm-hmm. And it's weird. It's just, why would you even need to know that, right? Because you're so enthralled. But it did reflect some of those issues and did make some very poignant issues as it related to class and race and those types of things. Mm-hmm. It just kept its medium segregated to a point.
Yeah.
I always found that interesting. How do women fare?
In soaps?
Yeah.
I mean, soaps are the one form of storytelling where women characters have always been at the center of the story. Like, there have always been, I mean, in the radio era, like the woman heroine was really the center. As the cast got bigger and more kind of ensembles in TV, that changes a little bit. Mm-hmm. But women characters have always been kind of the drivers of the action. And I think that that's one of the things that makes soaps different.
That's why the guys watch.
Yeah. Well, it's you know, it different kinds of things happen when women characters are kind of running the show.
Yes, they do. And the fact that there's a woman writer, usually a woman director.
Yeah.
And on and on and on. Yeah. But the problem is the person that's hiring is usually not a woman.
Yeah. It depends like who the executive producer are.
All right.
Whether the network has the oversight of that is another, because that's going to be a different level of control too.
And so now you're victim to that person's, you know,
mm-hmm.
nope, I like that kind of woman, not that kind
yeah,
of woman.
For
well,
sure.
Really? You know, those types of things. Well, thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
We'll have to have you back and dig some more.
Sounds great.
I've always been intrigued by the media as it relates to race and class, because it can do the most good and the most damage.
For sure.
Literally in the same program at the same time.
Yeah.
And I just find that intriguing.
Yeah. I mean, power there, it's powerful. It's a powerful space, and it shapes a lot of our ideas and ways we experience the world.
Very much so. Let me check. I don't want people hollering at me later. I sent a question and you didn't ask it. As the world turns.
Yes.
So As the World Turns and Secret Storm were the two shows my mother watched religiously on CBS.
Got it.
As the World Turns was set in Oakdale, Illinois.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
I never realized that.
Yes.
And so these fictitious cities were never large cities. They were always small enough so that the family controlled everything.
Yeah.
And it was always predominantly white. The city, the everything.
Yes.
But what I'm starting to see, and I know we got to go because he's looking at me like,
hey.
Even on General Hospital, the black characters are starting to drop off.
Mm.
You know, you've got one main character, the doctor, and then you've got Portia and her husband and mm-hmm. Trina, and that's it. Like, there's nobody, like the other black guy left. Like,
yeah,
why does there seem to be a churn with black characters?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to know. Like, there's a lot of churn in soaps in general, and so it's kind of hard to know. I think they have to figure out ways to integrate characters into the mm-hmm. stories of the community. And so putting somebody like Portia, who's the head chief of staff of the hospital, like putting her in the middle of that environment gives her a role that keeps her, right, you know, makes it make sense to have that character there and be involved in the world of the community. And so when they can't figure out what to do with somebody, then that's becomes the problem.
they're in a fire and they've gone to Germany to get treatment.
Yes.
And then they come back different and it's a whole different person.
For sure.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you, Dr. Levine.
My pleasure.
For being here.
Thank
we'll
you.
Have to have you come back in the fall and
okay.
see what's happening new on TV. And
love it.
I got to talk to you about my other favorite show.
Which is?
NCIS.
Oh, interesting.
Tony and Ziva.
Okay.
Because I know they're only on Paramount. We'll talk about that, too. This whole streaming thing where now you got to pay to watch everything when it used to be free. Terrible. Terrible. Dr. Elena Levine, thank you so very much for being here. UWM Professor of English. So make sure you look her up and check out her new book. It's a great book. I kind of bought it. Yes, I'm one of those nerds. I do.
Awesome.
I
love it.
All right. Hey, you're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. Top 5 at 5 up next.
Don't touch that dial. More of Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris is next on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. This is Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Yeah.
You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris. Hey, Truth Nation, join us for the 54th annual Juneteenth celebration in Milwaukee on Thursday. In case you didn't know the day, June 19th, the Truth will be broadcasting live from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Stop by our broadcast, say hello, get some Truth swag. Juneteenth in Milwaukee is one of the oldest and biggest Juneteenth celebrations in the country. So don't miss out on your chance to celebrate with us with our live Juneteenth broadcast presented by Hope Christian Schools and Carroll University. 101.7 The Truth celebration on Juneteenth is also brought to you by American Family Insurance, Gruber Law Offices, Molson Coors, Educators Credit Union, and Associated Bank. So, want to see you next week. Hang out, chill out, get in the parade, roll through, do all that kind of stuff. But, can you tell all like soap operas? Like it's just a past tense. It passes my day away. I fall asleep watching it every night, right? Because I never quite see the whole episode because I go, all right, I got to watch General Hospital when I recorded it. Yeah. And then that's that. So it only takes me like 5 or 6 times. Valerie, One Life to Live is gone. It's been gone. 10, 15 years. It's out of here. Just so you know. I'm just reading through the talking text line before I hit my top 5 at 5 because I'm late. And it's Glenn's fault. Because I can never take blame for me doing something dumb like being late with the top 5 at 5. I would never do that. Somebody said, I'll say I like Wisconsin weather. That heat bring big problems. Madi. Yeah, it do. But that's like saying, what was it? Like a full moon. Do you think things happen under a full moon? They don't. Like they looked on average over the course of a good number of years and they found out that the full moon didn't have any more effect or less effect or more people go to the ER and all that. None of it. Like none of it. It didn't fly. But it's one of those rumors we have. Oh my God, it's a rumor. Brian said the Pacers are a race car that starts the Indianapolis 500. A pacer. I didn't say pacing. Okay. A pacer is a horse. Right? And so the horse, the pace horse that goes around, that's a pace horse. That's why they're called pacers. Are you saying we named a basketball franchise after a car? I don't think so. But I get your point, Brian. I get it. That's different. Got to give it that. That is different. It is most definitely. And I'm gonna try to lay off the Knicks today. I'm gonna try to be nice. You know, I know people are in mourning, and you know, it's kind of. I get it. It's tough. It's tough. I mean, you know, things are getting bad in the world. Is there anything worse than stealing mail?
Number 5.
Well, from blackenterprise.com, a Detroit mailman faces federal charges. Federal. Busted after his boss catches him in a scheme to defraud the government. How'd that happen? Well, a Detroit-based mailman is facing serious federal charges after being caught to defraud in a scheme to defraud agencies of COVID-19 pandemic era unemployment insurance. So CBS News Detroit reports that Christopher Powell admitted after being caught by a supervisor to using addresses from his delivery route in an effort to get unemployment insurance benefits. The criminal complaint by the feds alleges the scheme took place in Wayne County between July 2020 and April 2024. What does that even mean? Well, the unidentified supervisor then contacted U.S. Postal Service Office of Inspector General. Postal inspectors started an investigation. The mailman told authorities that he filed an unemployment claim in Michigan in 2020 while still being on COVID leave from the mail agency and claimed he hadn't received benefits from other states. But now get this, y'all. The investigation revealed other unemployment insurance claims were filed by Powell with his Social Security number and date of birth in, you ready? Arizona, California, Maryland, Michigan, Montana, Nevada, Oklahoma, and Pennsylvania. He later admitted that a friend applied for the unemployment insurance benefits in California on his behalf using his personal information. After authorities showed the disgraced mailman pieces of mail addressed to him with addresses on his delivery route, he admitted to using vacant addresses along his route in order to have mail delivered to him instead of his own residence. One piece of mail confiscated during the investigation was a bank statement. Now get this, y'all. From December 2026 through January 25th, 2024. You ready? Ready? From December 26th, day after Christmas, to January 25th. That's just 1 month. More than $25,000 in ATM withdrawals and Cash App transfers. And y'all wonder why they're going after people to report stuff on Cash App. Powell faces mail and wire fraud charges in addition to 26 claims filed with his home address. Seven of them were successfully granted in Michigan and Arizona. So court documents highlight how criminals are able to pull off such schemes, falsely obtaining funds, depositing them into a bank account. After funds are used or taken out, criminals then contact the bank and claim somebody fraudulently gained access to their account and disputed all the charges, and then they get all the money back, and then they go. And we wonder why we don't need something done about fraud in America. I think we do. Oh, by the way, those of you that visit Third Street Market, there's a change coming.
Number four.
From UrbanMilwaukee.com, Dairyland Old Fashioned Frozen Custard and Hamburgers and Midway Bakery anchor tenants at Third Street Market Hall are wrapping up their downtown tenure. That's according to an announcement made on yesterday. The burger stand and bakery are among the original vendors that opened here at Third Street Market, where we broadcast from, in the American Family Insurance Studio. Originally launched in 2020, Dairyland began as a takeout in Oak Creek and worked its way today, nostalgic menu, inspired by classic roadside burger stands with options like the Whiz, topped with cheese sauce, brown mustard, and fried onions. A patty melt served on grilled rye bread and all that. So they are leaving. They are actually leaving. A similar concept is set to take over. Minneapolis-based Bebezito, with a menu featuring burgers, chicken sandwiches, and homemade ice cream, will open in the hall, its fourth location. The business currently operates in the popular Malcolm Yards Food Hall in Minneapolis near the University of Minnesota campus. I've eaten there. It's good. Upcoming Milwaukee restaurant will offer a comprehensive Bebezito experience with a menu that could include fan favorites like Tres Leches Strawberry Snickerdoodle. Can't eat that. Once featured on the Food Network, Marvelous Mrs. Hazel, a vegan, dairy-free flavor, ranked third best in the country at Cone Con. So, looks like they're leaving and they're coming. So, it looks like there's new food that's on its way to Third Street Market. But the only way that you can do is to get in your car and come down and park and come hang out and eat yourself into a coma. Speaking of eating yourself into a coma, sometimes we need an update. Our lives, our body. No more updates from that other trial where the guy is accused of killing Shadé Robinson. We're not going to get an update until he's found guilty. I'm skipping to, well, my other dastardly dude, Diddy.
Number three.
Well, there's a Diddy update, but it doesn't come from who you might think it should come. As Sean Diddy Combs' federal trial on sex trafficking, this is from TheRoot.com, transportation to engage in prostitution, racketeering charges goes on, others are sharing their unfiltered truth about the disgraced mogul. Latest to weigh in is who? Judge Greg Mathis, known for his no-nonsense approach, who mints no words discussing Diddy's true nature and the rise of his larger-than-life gangster persona. He was on his podcast, The Mathis Verdict, with his son, Amir, to discuss the Bad Boy Record mogul's case. And basically what he said is that he's much worse than a toxic person. He's a monster from what they've been showing and what we've been hearing. He's a state crime monster. Mathis added how Diddy, 55, has a temper, and he's known for that. And people are in fear because of his temper, but street guys don't fear him because they know he's never been in the street. He was a kid, went to Catholic school. When he was bullied, he tried to join up some little old gang in New York, and I think Harlem, that wasn't even engaging in crime. He mentioned how Diddy's father, who was killed, was a big gangster in New York. And from my understanding, his mother was nothing to play with, and she was associated with his friends from the past, like I'm associated with my friend gangsters from the past. So there was a sense of fear in New York, one in particular that was close to his dad and that everybody feared the nation. Mathis added that because of his parents' association, that's why he felt such liberty on being the tough guy. And they talked about him portraying himself as a gangster Diddy and music videos, and he wanted to earn the respect of Notorious B.I.G. and how he began to genuinely believe that about himself. Interesting. So the trial goes on, and every day they're coming up with more and more information to show some of the things that he has done. By the way, is Lil Wayne coming to Milwaukee? I heard he was coming, and then I heard he wasn't, and then I heard he coming, and then I heard he wasn't. Well, now I hear
number two,
he's coming. Rapper Lil Wayne will bring his the Carter Six tour. How'd I miss that? Anyway, can't tell y'all the music I listen to. But anyway, the Carter Six tour is coming to Milwaukee this summer. The 5-time Grammy winner will perform at the American Family Insurance Amphitheater Friday, August 22nd. Lil Wayne's next album, The Carter Six, drops this Friday, the same day general tickets go on sale for his Milwaukee show. Now, why do people care in Wisconsin about Lil Wayne? Anybody know why? Anybody know why? Because this man is in love with the Green Bay Packers. He is a ridiculous Packer fan. He made an appearance on April's NFL draft in Green Bay. Like, he went to the draft. He loves the Green Bay Packers. You see him on the sideline. He has a jersey on. He sings. He loves it. I was about to say something, but since y'all came at me when I said that about Giannis, I'm not going to say nothing about the Packers. Yeah, I will. I don't understand why. Anyway, I'm a Packer fan. I'm a Packer fan until they play the Bears. They beat the Bears last year, and they lost to the Bears last year. They beat the Bears on a field goal that was botched. This time, they didn't botch the field goal, and they won. I remember because I was in Arizona watching it on a big screen, and I went, ugh. And every single person in there was a Packer fan. So I thought it was great. Then I went back to being a Packer fan. I'm only a Bear fan twice a year when they play the Packers. Man. The Bears are going to just, anyway, yeah, you know what that is.
Number one.
This from Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service. So Milwaukee residents stand to benefit from a recent Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling that extends employment protections to people with municipal citations. The court found that individuals with non-criminal citations, right, municipal citation, on their record are entitled to the same protections of employment discrimination as individuals with criminal records. So protecting people in this way can help them avoid the long-term consequences of criminal justice involvement, like getting a ticket for speeding, retail theft, or something like that when they were a kid or whatever. That's what Julianne Bleefnick, N-I-C-K, operational coordinator for FREE, a statewide organization that supports currently and formerly incarcerated women and girls. She said, hopefully, people that have made these smaller mistakes in their lives are going to be able to become more upwardly mobile. So, you know, municipal citation is for violating a local ordinance. Common municipal citations, you know, driving and disorderly conduct and curfew and all that stuff. Muni court, as we call it in law enforcement parlance, handles up to 60,000 cases a year, highest volume of any municipal court in Wisconsin, according to county data, which kind of makes sense because the city is the largest, it's a Class A city. In 2023, they had 70,527. They handle 16% of all statewide municipal court cases. And so the ruling, which was on April 10th, ruled because the Oconomowoc Area School District versus COTA, that municipal citations qualify as arrest records under the Wisconsin Fair Employment Act. And somebody fought it and said, well, no, that means just like felons and misdemeanors, employers cannot base employment decisions such as hiring, firing, promotion, or transfer solely on a person's record. Well, what they're saying is that municipal citations were not included with misdemeanors and felonies, so they can hold that against you and not give you a job based on municipal citations you received or convictions. But they couldn't do it with misdemeanors and felonies. Does that even make any sense? Well, finally, somebody took it to the state Supreme Court, and I agree. The ruling is a clarification of existing law. Existing law. The court had not previously said one way or another whether municipal citations counted as arrest records, and now it has answered that question. The answer helps level the playing field for many Milwaukee residents with a municipal citation on their record, and they want to reenter the community after they were incarcerated. Here's the issue I see with this, right? Now that you have it and it counts, other people can hold it against you. Now, will it count towards your sentencing if you get sentenced for something? Well, if it counts as an arrest record, it can stop you from getting a job. But I don't know. It just might send you to prison that much quicker. And now with 101.7 The Truth, we're Sean Brenda.
Backups from 43 northbound through Marquette Interchange towards Keefe Avenue. 43 southbound seeing slowdowns from Capitol Drive all the way to I-94 southbound past Beecher Street. I-94 westbound backups start from South Lane Boulevard through the CM Interchange to Mitchell Boulevard. I-94 eastbound is a turtle crawl from South 92nd Street to the Stadium Interchange. 894 backups begin from Beloit Road to Forest Home Avenue. Tonight, storms to rain and a low of 56 degrees. From the WTMJ Traffic Center, I'm Sean Brenda on 101.7 The Truth.
Don't touch that dial. More of Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris is next on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. You are listening to Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris, for Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. You know, time to upgrade your windows and your doors, but don't want to, like, spend a fortune. Well, Pella, the best in the industry, has a product line for every single budget. Right now, you can get no interest and no payments for up to 2 years. So if the plan is to wait, guess what? You can get it now and wait and start making payments later. Up to 2 years later. Certain restrictions apply. Ends June 30th of 2025. Set your free in-home consultation today at PellaWI.com. That's PellaWI.com. Also want to remind you that Truth Nation, you already know from what we've been listening to and seeing here in Milwaukee, violence is a problem that affects all of us, but together we can make a difference. This is why we're hosting the third annual Truth Walk Against Violence Liberatory Low on Saturday, July 12th from Victory Over Violence Park. down MLK Drive right to our studio at the 3rd Street Market. Over the next month, Tory Lowe will be speaking with politicians and community leaders and all sorts of people about how we can better provide resources to stop the rise in violence that you see in the news today. If you want to join the walk, if you want to fight to stop the violence, go to truthwalkagainstviolence.com. That's truthwalkagainstviolence.com. Right now, sign up for our Walk Against Violence, supported by 1MKE. That's Saturday, July 12th, 9 a.m. to 12 noon. 833-212-1017 is the number. You know, I was looking at Black Enterprise. Hang on, let me quick check the talking text line so I don't get hollered at, because y'all be hollering at me. Hey, we trying to set you or something that you hadn't talked about. Hey, Kwanda, how are you? Diddy will be pardoned, no doubt. Nah, he's not getting pardoned. That would be the last straw with Trump if he pardons Diddy. That would make absolutely no sense. But I digress. So what do you think? How many crashes are happening because somebody's staring at a cell phone? Anybody know? Like, any idea? Anybody know? So there are 35,000 fatal crashes nationwide in 1 year. 35,000. Out of the 35,000, 8% were distraction related. Like they were doing something else. They got distracted, having a conversation, fighting, arguing, talking on the phone, or they were looking at their phone. Resulted in 3,142 fatalities, either texting or driving. Operating a motor vehicle is inherently dangerous due to numerous risks associated with driving, like people hitting you, not you hitting people. Safe driving requires full and constant attention on the road. Any driving distraction substantially increases the chance of an accident. And 3,142 people found out, because a death occurred, that driving distracted does not work. Now, it's starting to get warm, right? But people, some of them, were noticeably manipulating handheld devices behind the wheel of a car, crashed and died. Ages between 16 and 24 were most likely to be seen doing it. You got to be careful, or you can die trying.
Don't touch that dial. More of Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
President, Community Lending Market Executive from Old National Bank.
This is Truth in the Afternoon with Dr. Ken Harris on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
So don't text and drive. And I like to text, so I'm going to just stop driving. Okay, that's one. Then let me see. I'm just going to stop doing the things that I do. Yep, just give up. Go home and sit down. Relax. Reading a text message takes 5 seconds. You're driving at 55 miles an hour. You can travel the length of a football field before you recognize your surroundings. Yep, I'm not even walking. You're listening to Truth in the Afternoon. I'm your host, Dr. Ken Harris. Tory Lowe Show is coming up next. You can hang out with us and be with us over the next 22 hours, starting at 7 a.m. for the best in Milwaukee Black Talk. I'm Dr. Ken Harris. I want to say thank you to Glenn. Appreciate you. Have a great night, Al and Mal and Kawanda and Reggio. And let me see, who else is up on here? Gotta go back. All right. Curly Q, what's going on? Have a great evening. Be careful. Rain is coming after 9 o'clock. Severe thunderstorms again. So be careful. God bless. Take care.
Be quiet.